Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Be the best, and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Well, Jordan, we've reached the bye week, and I think we all need a bye, don't we? I mean, it's a good way to approach life. Sometimes you just need a bye. And the Rams do. I think we do. Everybody needs a bye. But some stuff we want to talk about, because not a real encouraging game, Jordan. A loss to the 49ers, which is becoming all too typical for the Rams under Sean McVay. Drops them to 7-3. Big picture, Jordan. I mean, what do you think? I was thinking about this the night of the game. The Rams were 7-3 after 10 games last season. It's like that old adage in the, you know, presidential elections. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And that's what I was sitting here thinking. At 7-3, if you're the Rams, are you better off than you were 12 months ago when you were sitting at 7-3? I'm not really sure what the answer is.
Yeah, I probably am not going to fall into that particular narrative because I think, like, it's a very different scenario in which, you know, I think you see – this was never, and we warned people about this at the beginning of the season, and, you know, even back well into, you know, January, whatever, this was probably not going to always look really good in terms of onboarding a new quarterback into an entirely new offense. It looks even worse, as it turns out, when you miss one of your steadiest receivers, right. When you are twice in a row in prime time dropping these games against teams that have the formula down to beat you. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. I think where you can make a comparison that's maybe includes the proper nuance of the situation instead of maybe as like an overarching like quarterback comparison, for example. And I'm not going to even get into that because we could talk for several hours about the numbers and the differences and the ways the offense has changed and all of those types of things and what was happening in the building that made that an untenable situation moving forward. But I think what to really look at here is what Sean McVay and his staff need to be looking at right now. And that is, have teams figured us out? Have teams figured out a way to out-scheme us if they have the correct personnel to do that? The 49ers and the Titans both had the correct personnel to out-scheme the Rams in the way that they – that would hurt them in a way that I'll get into in a minute, philosophically, importantly, yes, but also schematically as well. And how do they, this is the question, how do they continue to push forward and continue to evolve? And it will probably take reaching back into some familiar tools. It will probably take adding help in places that, you know, they need to add it. And it will also take, I think, a level of execution and preparation and plan being implemented in ways that for the last 2 weeks, in terms of especially the in-game adjustments, we just simply didn't see. And that around this time last year, week 8, week 10, the Rams very much it was clear. The Rams, this is troublesome. Something right. has to change. This will not work moving forward. That was the zero blitz game. That was the turnovers had reached an apex. That was everything skidding off the rails, despite their personnel being arguably better on defense.
Right.
In places much better on defense. And pretty overall the same, because I'm not going to count Odell Beckham's presence add, especially not outweighing the loss of Robert Woods, especially not outweighing the loss of Johnny Munt, especially not outweighing the loss of Cam Akers. Maybe a little bit more stable last year this time than it was, than it is right now. And those are things that they have to iron out moving forward. But they have to figure out how to continue to push this thing forward. I think the reason why I'm not as worried about them as I was last year at this time is I think they have the people to do that. I think they have the quarterback to do that. I think they have the players to do that on the offensive side, even without Robert Woods, which, again, can't understate, or is it? I don't know if it's overstate or understate, but you can't under exaggerate the loss of a player of his caliber, especially with some of the concepts that are quite literally built around him. You saw how they had to sort of adjust on the fly. Daryl Henderson is catching his third down targets, or what didn't catch it, but was the target on that third down. That's the Robert Woods play that is so sure, and a 50% conversion rate now was a failed play. Those are things that you see, the little details that they had to hedge and try to adjust. And I think that they will be able to put this thing together moving forward. They have the capability to, and I think that's where a lot of it will come down to coaching is I do think they have the capability. I think they have the pieces to put this together, especially on offense, especially in the margin where they believed that margin would improve to the point of overshadowing some of the issues that we are seeing on defense. That's the margin they need to spam right now. They need to put everything they have into that margin and widen it as much as possible, and make this offense, you know, into something that we saw at the beginning of the year, and against Tampa Bay as well, like something dangerous. That's why I don't feel the same as I did this time last year at all, in terms of being on the ground and watching the strategy and seeing some of the details and the nuances there. At the same time, they are in danger here. Because there is a way to beat this team, particularly if you are a ball control team on the other side.
Jordan, you covered it so well in your column, which is now online on the Athletic app and website. If people haven't checked that out already, you've had a couple of days. So what are you doing if you haven't checked it out already? But and if you've been busy, things happen. That's fine. Go check it out. But Jordan, one question I had off of that is, do we know what the identity of this Rams team is right now? Or do they have an identity? It seems like whether it's injuries or the additions coming in and out, I'm not sure that I look at the Rams and say, yes, this is who they are. This is how they're going on both sides of the ball, by the way, not just offense, not just defense, but both sides of the ball and special teams, which, oh boy, I'm sure we will get into that in a little bit. But is this a team that you go into a game now, especially a game like San Francisco, a game like Tennessee, where you know how they're going to try to play you, and you know what Rams football is? Do you feel good about that?
I think part of the reason why you're struggling to find out how you feel about this team right now is because they're struggling to figure out who they are, or maybe not struggling, but like in the process of still doing that. Yeah. And it seemed clearer at first that they were going to be a drop back team that passes it the hell down the field consistently. I have no issue with that. The problem is they were able to protect against interior pressure early in the year, and now they are not. Against teams with the personnel to handle that. And I will say, like, I'm going to give them credit for what they did against Tampa Bay, particularly that interior front. And I believe that these guys can do it. Again, that's why I'm not feeling like totally hopeless right now, in terms of if I were a fan, I wouldn't feel totally hopeless right now. They can do it. They can do it. Yeah. They have done it. The problem is they're also not adjusting what the quarterback's doing they're not adjusting in some of those ways where if your drop back stuff isn't working and you're still adamantly going to be passing the ball downfield, particularly when you're in a deficit, particularly when they're guys, go read Ben Solak's piece at The Ringer this morning. He very, very summed up very adequately the issues in terms of lack of adjustments that are happening right now, the adjustments that need to happen moving forward. And he noted that teams are not, it's like the Pat Mahomes effect. Teams are not blitzing Matthew Stafford very much right now because they're getting pressure with four. And specifically, that pressure is not coming around the edge. It's coming up the gut. Mm-hmm. That's coming against Brian Allen, against David Edwards, against Austin Corbett. And they're not doing well against it. And that's just true right now. They have done well against it before. They've done a great job against that before. But the last 2 weeks, in terms of what they're trying to keep forcing down the defense's throat in terms of the drop back game, it's not working. So you have to start moving the pocket around. This is something where I come back to the adjustments part, and that's on coaching, in my opinion, is right. you spent the entire spring, summer, first part of this year talking about how much Matthew Stafford expands. I've had this conversation via press conferences or just in passing, like, you can use play action here. You can use it, especially the run action. You can use it as a tool. You don't have to worry about it becoming a crutch because you can pull back and do the other stuff when that starts working. It's the ability to do a lot of things at once. That's the reason you brought this quarterback in.
Yeah.
But you're now falling into the drop back game too often. And that's when teams are coming right up the gut, and that's when Matthew Stafford is getting bothered. Now, I'll weigh that with also saying he's still producing the highest EPA per pass play in the NFL right now. So again, the wheels are not off this bus, but the fact is if you spend a lot of time talking and believing and it's true that this quarterback can do a lot of different things, then you also need to do your part schematically to alleviate that pressure if your guys are not getting it done up front and they are getting outmatched up front 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's yes, the physical part that offensive linemen think, and I think Andrew Whitworth spoke very well about this point 2 weeks ago, the physical part of playing offensive line, yes, that does come in the run game. But the physical part where they're getting outmatched is coming in the drop back pass game. And that, I think, is what we're talking about when we talk about getting physically outmatched. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about a lack of identity. It's because the lack of adjustments is making it feel a lot more helter-skeltery than it has to be. And you can't just establish an identity without also pulling the tools out of the tool bag. If you're going to be a finesse team, be a finesse team. That means you have to try to do different stuff.
Yeah.
That means you have to be smarter than what they're doing against you. It's okay to be a finesse team right now in the way the league is, the way that the passing attacks are and all of that. But you have to be adjusting in order to do that. And that has to be part of the identity in order for that to work. So that's why I think you're struggling to see it on the offensive side. Plus the change in personnel, it does not help. Johnny Munt was a much bigger loss than people are willing to admit. Robert Woods is obviously a huge loss, as we said. The Rams are being extremely careful with their running backs. I think it's pretty clear why at this point. If it's not clear, tweet at me. I'll explain it to you. But it's pretty clear why they're being overly careful with their running backs right now. And between reps and injuries, and also, by the way, the fact that they are down against ball control teams specifically 2 weeks in a row, and they can't even get the ball back, let alone run the ball in the first place. And then when you do, you're being overly careful about it. And then on the other side of the ball, and I promised I wasn't going to rant today, but we're in it now. On the other side of the ball, defensive identity, they're all over the place. This is a defense with Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, now Von Miller. Kind of going to remove Von from the equation for now because I do want to be fair to those new guys and say, like, it would be unrealistic to think that they would have game-changing impact in their first game with the Rams. But this is a team that should have a defensive identity.
Yeah.
But they've got one foot in the door from last year, and they've got one foot in the door for whatever the hell they are doing this year, and it's not working. You can't be two things. You have to pick one and be one. And quite honestly, the thing they picked last week does not work.
No.
I'll get into why, no. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts to that same question that you asked me.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're all over the place. And there's been a lot going on, and that plays into it with injuries. This isn't when you lose Cam Akers at the start of the season, you're not going to have the identity that you thought you had. When you lose Robert Woods, when you're making these big swings during the season, bringing in Odell, bringing in Vaughn, letting go Kenny Young and putting in a rookie, all of these things factor in, specifically on the offensive side. I kind of pulled back a little bit, even in part because of things you were saying. I thought immediately after the game, I thought and prepare. It's the hit the button for the Rich talks about the run game portion of the podcast. But after the game, I kind of sat there and I thought, well, why don't you just simplify it? You know, like, you have all this stuff going on. You've lost Robert Woods. It's Odell's first game. You don't know how your interior offensive line is going to hold up in pass protection. Matthew Stafford's been a little bit at times, especially early in games. Why not simplify it? Why not just, and you're playing, as you just said, Jordan, a 49ers team that you know is going to try to take the air out of the ball, and their dream scenario is to get up with a lead in the first quarter. Knowing all that, why not just simplify it? Why not just say, hey, we're going to try to run the ball. We're going to try to control this clock, and we're going to try to, not let the 49ers get into that type of game that they want to play. I still think there's a part of that, but I also think you have to balance that with exactly some of the points that you just made, Jordan. And even in the run game, Robert Woods is a big part of the run game. Johnny Munt has been a big part of the run game. Darrell Henderson, I'm sorry. I love Darrell Henderson. I hope for nothing but the best for him. But what history has now shown us over the past 3 years is that it's going to be hard to rely on Darrell Henderson to be your number one running back, just because things happen. It's not his fault. It doesn't make him a bad person. It doesn't make him a bad running back. Some of it is just purely bad luck, but things just happen to Darrell Henderson.
Yeah, and I think good point. Keep going, but good point, because mm-hmm. I do think a lot of it, just the poor guy, like, just bad luck, man. But
it's bad luck.
You can't design a run plan around a guy as a sort of a lead back or a workhorse back if he hasn't been able to stay for a full series consistently or a full game consistently. And a lot of it is bad luck, and I hate it for him.
Yeah.
But as a team, you can't. And then with Sony, like, Sony, this run game is hard to learn. It's complicated. Sony, I think, is doing the best with what he's got, but they never brought him in to be a lead back.
Right. Yeah, there was a reason. And again, nothing against Sony Michel, but there was a reason why he was available when he was and in the situation he was. Like, if that's not the situation that he was supposed to be in. So it's asking a lot of him and asking a lot of everybody for him to be in that situation. So, based on all of that, like, talking about the identity, I mean, look, your identity is where you put your resources, right? And the Rams during the offseason, In moving out Jared Goff and bringing in Matthew Stafford, they put a ton of resources into the quarterback position. Draft picks, they are spending, combined with Matthew's cap hit and Jared Goff's dead cap, $44.7 million into the quarterback position. That's almost one quarter of their cap responsibility is going to that position. So whether you want to say it or not, your identity is based around Matthew Stafford. So your job as a coaching staff, I think, is to put Matthew Stafford in the best position that he can be in to run this offense, to run this team. And I don't know whether they're doing that right now. And I'm not saying that's easy, because I don't think it is, based on all of the factors that we've just been talking about. But that's really going to be the challenge here over these next seven games, these last seven games of the regular season. How do you figure this out to where you can get Matthew Stafford effective and where he's controlling the game, where he's your best player on the field, because that's what you need him to be. Defense, Jordan, I'm going to let you go on this. I want to hear you talk more about the defense, because this is something that you've been studying very closely ever since you arrived in LA, but especially, during this transition and stuff, because I want to hear from you about the identity of this defense and where you think things are. Because people on Twitter, I understand they're very upset, but I think there's a lot of depth and nuance to this as to why it's not working. And I'm just going to turn it over to you, Jordan, because I really want to hear what you think about this.
Yeah, I showed you my notes before this, so I know you know it's you just I know you saw the word ILBs and you're like, oh shit, it's on. But really quick, before we get into the defense, I do want to say, yeah, as you were talking, something sort of dawned on me, Rich, and that is this team has made a big thing about being successful in its pivots, in its quick pivots, in its sort of fearlessness to make decisions that don't reset their team build model, but they pivot certain things or they introduce catalysts into their system. The last 3 weeks, and this is why the circles under my eyes are this color, like the last 3 weeks, they've done nothing but not only introduce catalysts into their system again, right, and reset sort of what some of that identity is going to be. They've also, by sheer bad luck, had to have catalysts thrust upon them in the loss of Sebastian Joseph Day on one side, their best run defender on the team, and the guy who is going to straight up manhandle offensive linemen and running backs and the, you know, guys who are doing the things that Deebo Samuel can do against you, and someone who also brings a lot of soul and personality, spirit, emotion that Michael Brockers also did, yeah, and somebody who is having a phenomenal, fantastic season. Losing him, and I mentioned this in my column, it's not the Rams' fault that these moves that they made happen at the same time that these really actually gaping losses in Sebastian and in Robert are happening. But you are not only introducing catalysts into your system, but now they are being thrust upon you in ways that make you porous in spaces that you cannot be porous. And so now the Rams have to prove just how committed they are to those sort of pivots and those sort of catalytic factors that come into their system. How adept are you at navigating those things? You've shown us that when you introduce them yourself, you can do it. But can you do it when those things are incidental, happen to you?
Right.
What are the consequences and how do you counter them at this point? And right, so that's the important thing here. And I think that will be the identity if this team can do it and put it back together, which I do think they can. You know, it's not dumb and not dumb guys in there. Like for all the all the head scratching stuff that happened the last 2 weeks, you know, I do think that when they step away from it for a minute and look at what can help this offense and help this team, I do think that the answers are pretty clear in that regard. But I think that that's, I mean, do you think that's fair? I think that's kind of a, that will become kind of their identity.
It is. And I think it speaks to, and I don't want to get too granular on this or make it sound like I'm, you know, it's a hot take or anything, but it's what happens when your plan goes off script. I mean, it's, you can plan all you want and say, oh, this is who we're going to be if we have our full team healthy and you know, what we want to do. And I feel like the Rams have a very good plan for that, but sometimes things are going to happen. Sometimes you're going to have injuries. Sometimes teams are going to adjust to you and they're going to, quite frankly, I don't mean this to sound, whatever, but it punched you in the mouth. I mean, they got punched in the mouth the last 2 weeks and that's just what happened. I'm not trying to take shots at anybody or be, you know, put it out there, but that's what happened. And now they're going to have to look at that, take a hard look at that and say, hey, you know what? Things aren't going the way we thought they were going to go. And whether that's scheme changes, whether that's personnel changes, there's a lot of things that need to be looked at. And Jordan, I thought you said it so well. And I'm curious, I'd like you to expand on this if you can, because I really do think that they are stuck in the middle. I think that was a great way to put it. Do they need to, what's the way out of this? I guess is what I'm asking you. Do they need to just firmly plant their foot and go in one direction or another? Is it too late to do that in a season? Can you in a bye week, can you just say, hey, we're going to change our identity a little bit and this is who we are? Or are we too far down that road? Like what is the formula here that you think that they need to follow on defense?
Yeah, on defense, I have very real concerns that I don't think should be a problem, but are. And so I think I will start with what I think the 49ers did well in terms of their game plan. I think that they spammed the Rams inside linebackers extremely well. I think that their pre-snap alignments at times removed Jalen Ramsey from the equation, because if you'll note, there's a lot of people upset that he didn't just like shadow Debo the entire time. Well, they brought Debo into the backfield on some of those plays, and even on some like known passing plays, and aligned him in various ways. And at that point, you have to pick, do you keep him on essentially their currently, and nothing against George Kittle, Debo Samuel is their most dangerous weapon right now, because of the things that they're doing with him and the way that he can break tackles and the way that he can hit those catch and runs, particularly when going first east to west and then north to south against the Rams, what they're doing at corner on the outsides right now. So that they deemed Debo to be their most dangerous weapon. The Rams also clearly, you know, deemed him and George Kittle as their most dangerous weapons. So you're picking your spots for Jalen Ramsey to be in, because you're moving him around the field. When you are moving Debo into the backfield, you can see this at times. You're bringing in Jalen Ramsey closer in case it's a run play. You're bringing him in closer to the line of scrimmage. And at that point, other options open to you, especially if you're getting the ball out quickly, or if you are running the ball and he is breaking those tackles on the first and second levels. They're doing all kinds of things in that regard. The problem is you have to pick the right spots for him. That's a coaching situation. Mm-hmm. And they're not going vertical with the ball. So you're not going to have him cover like a standard X, like he would cover a standard X. Instead, you're going to line jokers against jokers, but you have to pick the right jokers to line against. And then if you pick the one guy and you're wrong, the other players have to step up and contain the player the ball, either the ball goes to, or the run play and the rundown situation. The Rams did not do either of those things. Any of the three, actually.
Right.
They were not picking the right spots. They were at times still sending him on pressures when Jimmy Garoppolo was getting the ball out, according to Next Gen Stats, second quickest time to throw of his entire career. This is Jimmy, I'm afraid of the football in my hand, Garoppolo. Right. Get it away from me. Holy shit, get it away from me.
Hot potato,
Garoppolo. Right. And right. It's still getting out second quickest of his career, 2.3 seconds. And the blitz is not going to get there. It's just not. There's too much traffic to get around to. You cannot be blitzing against a quarterback who is getting the ball out that quickly. That is an incorrect call.
Yeah.
That's not that you can't do that.
Yeah.
And especially you cannot be blitzing Jalen Ramsey. They didn't. There were only a couple of those. So I'm not just saying that was the entire problem for the entire game, but it's a symbol of picking the wrong spots for him. Then even if you're wrong, you have to count on other players around you making the correct call. Last year, part of the reason why this defense was successful is because the overhang corners tackled in space very well. They played downhill even with a cushion, even when they had that cushion, that roof, quote unquote, that we always talk about. They played downhill nasty as crap. They were jumping routes. They were containing. There were a couple of games where I know Troy Hill missed a couple of calls, but man, there were games where him, John Johnson, Jordan Fuller are coming the heck downhill and they are crushing guys.
Right, right.
Before they hit the sticks. That was not the case again. And the ball's coming out quick, so you have less time to get there, particularly when you're playing from that much depth. Then you also can't overcommit because then they will try to throw the ball downfield past you if you overcommit. So you're caught in no man's land. And this was definitely a pure symbol of the no man's land that sort of this defense is caught in right now in terms of establishing what it is and what it wants to be. You're also missing Sebastian Joseph Day up front. I thought Aaron Donald played an outstanding game, particularly against the run, but you've got two, three guys on him on every play. What are you going to do? The third and two that he made, then Leonard Floyd gets called for a false start penalty, and that keeps one of their longest drives alive, ends in a touchdown. And they couldn't get off the field on third down because this all comes back to, football is such a small, small ecosystem, you guys. And what the 49ers did was they took the entire ethos and philosophy of this defensive scheme and especially hit it right in the gut as it's in no man's land. And they flipped it on its head and did the thing that works the best against it. And they executed it to perfection against the Rams, who let them do it.
Yeah.
The problem, they could run the ball in drips and drabs. They only averaged 3.5 yards per run by the end of the game. That should not beat you.
Right.
The problem was, is they were also outstanding on third down because they picked their spots and they out-schemed their joker players against the Rams' joker players.
Yeah.
In terms of George Kittle, in terms of Deebo Samuel, even some of the things that they were doing with Ayuk, like they were out-scheming their joker players against the Rams' joker players. They were guessing right more often. They were more prepared to guess right more often. Jimmy Garoppolo he converted a 3rd and 6 three times. Mm-hmm. 3rd and 4, 3rd and 7, and a 4th and 6 for a touchdown. The Rams allowed 8 third downs to be converted in 13 tries. Second half went a little bit better for them. First half, 5 for 5 on third down. Didn't get a third down stop until the third quarter. Taylor Rapp had a sack. And they're missing tackles on catch and runs, which again is a problem. Von Miller noted toward that at the end. When he said, you know, if you hit a guy at 3 yards and he falls to 7 yards, like that will kill a football team. And yes, it will, because then it makes you disadvantageous against the sticks on defense.
Right.
And then when you cannot get off the field and all they're doing is picking at you, they're taking care of the ball. You handed them their perfect scenario because you turn the ball over so you don't get points on your first drive. You turn the ball over. I'm not going to blame Matthew too much at all, actually, for that second interception.
No,
that's not on him. That's just one of those things a quarterback has to eat. The first one was a dumb throw. Yeah. They're excusing it in their comments by calling it like a really good arm punt. Like it was a punt. They lost 2 downs. So I'm not going to give them that excuse because that's 2 downs that you could have done something with and therefore sustained a drive.
It was 2nd and 8.
Yeah. They lost 2 downs. And so we're not calling it a punt. It was a dumb throw, bad throw. I could see where Matthew thought the route was going to go. You're onboarding a guy for the first time in your offense. I think that would have been a hell of a play if it completes. But it just was not, it wasn't a good idea. It just wasn't. So
Jordan, then, if I could just to make, cause I want to accentuate something that you just said, that first San Francisco drive, because it's right after that interception, it's the big, 18 plays, 16 plays, 93 yards. But you look at it and you talk about that 3.5 yards per carry. They weren't breaking off huge runs. I mean, Mitchell and Wilson were not, tearing up the field. You did get Deebo, he got some 6-7 yards, but what killed them, and you just enumerated some of them, 3rd and 6, 18 yard pass to George Kittle, 3rd and 1. Okay. They sneaked it for a first down. 3rd and 4, 7 yard pass to Kittle. And then ultimately the touchdown was a 3rd down play. 3rd and 6, an 8 yard touchdown pass. The Rams were putting them in 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, which is where you want to be, but they weren't finishing it off. And the 49ers, as you just very eloquently said, were finding ways to exploit them on third down, especially with Kittle and moving. Look, and the other thing, like, Kyle Shanahan is not a dumb person either. Like, you can bet he's been studying a lot of these things. And how am I going to use Deebo? How am I going to use Kittle? How am I going to get the ball? How am I going to avoid Jalen Ramsey, put him in situations where, you know, they don't want him to be? So that's really what killed them. It wasn't, you can say, oh, the run game, and they were just running the ball down their throat. Well, okay. But they were able to capitalize. If the Rams get one of those stops on third down, then it's a different game, perhaps.
Yeah, it was third down. Third down was the killer here. The fact that they so clearly could choose their spots to spam, again, to spam the linebackers, to spam the safeties, and then to also choose their joker targets and their joker alignments in order to keep the ball away from Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey's position, as you guys know, because I have vented and ranted about this for months now, Jalen Ramsey's position schematically is intended to make him an unavoidable player. Unavoidable player. But he's literally getting schemed out of plays without a counter or an adjustment. So that's right. The problem here. It's not about him. There's a nuance to the argument here. It's not about him sticking on an island to an ex. Teams don't play that way. The Niners do not play that way. Teams do not play that way anymore. No. It's not about that. The argument, I understand the ethos of that argument, which is, why isn't he always on their best player? I get that part. I do get that part. But the Rams had an opportunity here to come up with the correct guesses, the correct strategy against those two Joker players on the other side.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, surprisingly to me, was that Dante Dion was inactive. And Sean McVay brought this up in the press conference. And to me, he said something very interesting in that Dante's been playing his ass off. Like, he's been playing really well. So good for him. And that's clear. Yeah. Tennessee, part of the plan for Jalen against Tennessee was outstanding. They can watch that and see what the tendencies then are.
Right.
And then do something different against what they believe the Rams' plan would be.
Right.
And then you don't have Dante, who Sean McVay was saying was like actually one of the other guys who, while not a Joker player himself, helps counter the math in that regard because he can unlock some of that versatility, some of that movement that Jalen can do. Now, he's not a Joker player, but he is a key, similar to how Troy was, similar to how John Johnson was, a key in that regard. And it was a telling statement to me because that also seemed to me to be a direct shot at what the other corners are not doing and not able to do, and the other safeties are not able to do.
Right.
And so that being the other comment that was really concerning for me this week was the fact that I asked Raheem Morris and about some of the movement and the picks and in terms of the spots that they're picking for guys. And he was also asked about George Kittle, about Deebo Samuel. And he made a comment about how they have Joker players and we have them too. And they're going to it's going to be Joker players against Joker players. This is how the game is going to go. We have to pick better spots for our guys in order to counter what they're doing. So they knew this would be the plan. Mm-hmm. They were aware that this would be the plan. They did not either execute or pick the right spots. They did not look prepared, even though all indication was that they were prepared for what was coming. They did not look prepared at all. And it wasn't about the run game or defending the run. They missed Sebastian Joseph Day because he's not going to allow those catch and runs to happen. He's not going to allow some of those. He's going to help get that little inside push a little bit harder, maybe make Jimmy G a little bit more uncomfortable in some of those down and distances. But it wasn't an issue so much of the run game. The run game was what helped them control the clock. They see Matthew Stafford turn the ball over the first drive, and they're like, hell yeah, guys. Like, this is falling right into our hands, just like how it was with Tennessee. We're going to keep the ball on the ground. We're going to eliminate the opportunities. It was, 11 passes by the third quarter?
Yeah.
We're going to minimize the opportunities for – and most of those were on third down. We're going to minimize the opportunities for the Rams – playmakers to take the ball away, including Jalen Ramsey. This was like literally, this was the you see contain Aaron Donald plans. This was the contain Jalen Ramsey plan.
Right.
We're going to make sure that we keep the ball on the ground. We're going to make their corners tackle some of these wider plays that we do. Sorry, there's a plane flying very close to my apartment right now. Sorry if you can hear it. That's a little bit. Holy crap. That was not supposed to be that close to my apartment.
Oh boy! Okay. Yeah,
we'll leave that in because that was a moment of needed levity. I think. I thought Tucker and I were going to go hide in the bathtub or something. I better check the news to see that everything's okay. But basically, this was like you're going to make the other players who, in years past, when teams made the other players step up and do something, they did. This was make the other players step up and do something, control the ball, minimize the amount of turnover opportunity or takeaway opportunities for that defense, and control the clock. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying about the run game. In this game, good luck trying to run the ball anyway. It's not so much of a can. The 49ers had the ball for twice the amount of time that the Rams did. You just can't, you honestly cannot run the ball in that situation, especially if you're down 21. Like, you just can't. You just can't. You have to pass the ball. So they executed this perfectly, and it goes back. The Rams knew that they were going to be spamming these Joker players,
right?
And still were not prepared in the correct way. And so then it goes back to, to me, what I said before, this is a small world. This is a small ecosystem. Football is a small ecosystem. And I will tell you this, Rich. Over the spring and the summer, when I went to those two weekends with the Quarterback Collective, and I wrote about this and I linked it in my column if you guys want to find it. Those sessions, hours and hours and hours and hours of those two sessions were spent talking about the Shanahan-McVay system.
Yeah.
And the Fangio Staley defense.
Yeah.
Mike McDaniel, Butch Berry, Rich Scangarello were all there, along with other guys from both of those, all four of those coaching trees. And they sat at the table in the middle of the room and they obsessed over this defense. It wasn't like they were there for fun, for show, for the photo ops, for the whatever. I literally am sitting there lurking in the back, watching these guys obsess to a concerning level over this, over how to beat this defense.
Right.
And they weren't even trying to beat that defense. They were trying to beat some version of it that now exists.
So where do you
think? What I'm trying to say, and I'll finish here real quick.
Is
they have been waiting for this and planning for this and preparing for this and perfecting this so that they could beat it when the time came. That's not to say the Rams were not trying to prepare. And it's not to say that they did not have a good plan if they didn't maybe have to change it with the turnovers and then the ball control stuff that happened. What I'm saying is they should have known that this level was coming. That this level of obsession was coming. Sean McVay knows those guys. He knows them so well. And it's about, you could be on your end. Like, who are you surrounding yourself with?
Right.
To reach that level of obsession.
Right.
And there was a lack of execution in a lot of ways. You know, defensive coaches and Sean and all these guys, they can't go out and make guys contain on first contact. They can't go out and tackle players for them. They can't, you know, make their linebackers play better. They can't get the pressure. Like, they can't do that stuff themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So take that with a grain of salt there. But the problem for me, in terms of we're talking about this entire what you want to be as a defense and how you want to establish your identity, you knew that level of insanity was coming. Like, you knew that level of it was coming.
Right.
And they outguessed them, especially on third down, outguessed them at every phase.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
There were just so many opportunities in that game, just even looking at my notes when you were talking there. We talked about the first drive. And the Rams were down, 14-0, which you think, you know, that's trouble for all the reasons that we have said. They actually came back and scored on a very, very nice touchdown drive. I mean, they went 75 yards in, I think, seven plays, and had no trouble at all.
Yeah.
So
averaging, I know where you're going with this, and I just want to put this out here right now, because I love where you're going with this. I see, as Sean would say, you have that look in your eye. And I love it. I love the trajectory here. Keep doing this. I will say, averaging over 7 yards per play at this time.
Oh, yeah. 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 Huge. And it made you feel when you were watching it, like, okay, this is calmed down. And then the 49ers get the ball back. Well, who knows what's going to happen. But like you said, third and two, that play, Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd jumps offside. Gives them a fresh set. That could have been a punt right there. That could have been momentum right back on your side. Okay, let's go to the next series. It's third and two. The 49ers have a false start. It moves the ball back to their own 36. Third and seven. If you're a defense, that's a dream situation, especially with a 49ers team that is not an explosive offense. It's the exact situation that you want to be in. Third and seven on their side of the field. You'll take that 10 times out of 10. Well, what happens? A short pass to Debo. I don't remember the formation. I'd have to go back and look at it on the all 22 or whatever, but it was not a short. It was not a deep pass. It was a catch and run 20 yard completion in the end that moved them into Rams territory. They ultimately go on to score a touchdown. It's 21-7. The complexion of the game just completely flips back the other way. So it was just moment. And again, another one of those Joker plays. It's Debo. And if you don't think that the problem that I have, Jordan, is not when we talk about the Rams being 7-3 and there's a lot of people say, oh, you know, how can you complain about being 7-3? It's not about being 7-3. It's about what's going to happen over the next seven games. What's going to happen in the playoffs? Because like you said, Kyle Shanahan is not a stupid person. And there's a lot of smart coaches out there who are going to be looking at this stuff and looking at, okay, how did they attack this? How did they take Jalen Ramsey out of that calculus so well? If you think that other teams aren't going to do, if you think Matt LaFleur isn't going to be looking at that for the Green Bay game, if you think Cliff Kingsbury isn't going to be looking at that, if you think Shanahan's not going to be looking at it a second time when they play later in the season, like that's the issue here. It's not looking at them being 7-3 and, oh, well, they're still fine because they're in a playoff spot and the NFC only has like six teams over 500. It's looking at it saying, hey, if you want to be playing in February, then these are the kind of things that you better start cleaning up right now.
Yeah, and I think too, part of the thing that's noticeable to me is it's not so much it's a two-handed thing, right? A lack of adjustments on both sides of the ball, but in this game, especially notable on those third downs, the Rams used to have all sorts of insane packages for third downs. It was actually like, you hear coaches talking about it across the league, and people would say, like, yeah, it was like a weird hybrid calls between Brandon Staley, Wade Phillips, and Vic Fangio, third down philosophy. Like, it would be a bunch of weird, like, if one guy put it to me, he's like, oh man, they're just running voodoo shit on third down. Like, one assistant coach from another team put it that way to me in the summer. And it was like, okay, yeah. So, but you're not, when we talk about, in that column, we talk about things like substance and making sure you have that substance as a team. That's one of the things you're talking about, being feared on third down. As a defense, as an offense, I do think the Rams' third down stats and their go for pass, their shots past the sticks on third down still are leading the league, as is Matthew Stafford's EPA on third down. So I do think they are feared on third down on offense. On defense, right. you need to be feared on third down.
Right.
And they weren't in this, and they the drives were sustained, and that's part of the problem. Like even I thought they had a really good plan defensively against Tennessee. I thought they put Jalen where he needed to be. He made a couple of really great plays, including that interception. And I thought that was a really, really good plan. But your plan changes week to week and even half to half. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem is – and that goes hand in hand, too, with some of the execution things that you're seeing. Missed tackles. Again – being able to spam the inside linebackers, spamming the safeties, like
right.
missing tackles on the edges when you're at corner, when you're playing that overhang corner and you need to make the tackles. They weren't doing anything insane in the passing game. So in that case, your corners need to be a part of the effort against some of those outside plays, the catch and runs, those types of things. They need to come downhill hard, short of, and hold the receiver short of the sticks. And you're just not seeing some of that, right? You're not seeing that. And mm-hmm. I think it goes hand in hand, is how do you continue to adjust when your initial plan doesn't work? And this is on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
How do you continue to adjust when your initial plan doesn't work? And how do you also elevate the level of execution when you do make those adjustments? And so I think that was a big problem against this team. But going back to what you said about the being up or being down 21-7, like in my mind, even then the Rams were still in it because, again, they were averaging 7 yards per play.
Yeah.
And
then what happened after that, Jordan?
And then Sean McVay and this. OK, I did get some fair comments about, like, why are you bringing this up in your column? And I understand that, like, it's a special teams play. To me, the fake. First of all, it ran counter to the projected philosophy that Sean McVay has been trying to put out there about Matthew Stafford and keeping the ball in his hands. It ran counter to that fully. It also ran counter to making smart, coherent, aggressive decisions, not just aggressive decisions, not blindly aggressive decisions, smart, calculated aggression.
Right.
It ran counter to that as well. And that's where you have very real concerns about decision making, and you have very real concerns. So it was a symptom of a bigger problem, which is why I thought it was important to bring it up. Big symptom of a bigger problem, which is if you're arguing that your quarterback is going to give you a shot in these games and you're trying to put the ball in his hands more often, and I've been saying this for weeks now, you first of all need to leave him on the field for more fourth downs. You need to expand your package that you have on fourth downs. Sean McVay is, as we know, one of the most conservative fourth down decision makers in the NFL, especially now. And the margin year over year is widening between himself and others. Part of that, I will give him a little bit of a pass because he had a quarterback last couple of years that was throwing short of the sticks even on third down,
right?
Well short of the sticks on third down. So then you're probably not going to leave him on the field for fourth down. But you now have a quarterback who you intentionally pushed all the chips in. You made the phone call to Stan Kroenke. You brought him in. You pushed for him.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the ball in his hands on fourth down and expand your decision-making packages for him and your optionality packages for him to where you have the right play for those situations. Calling a fake field goal not only puts the ball into the hands. I love Johnny Hecker. This is not about Johnny Hecker. Johnny Hecker rocks. It's not about him. And he's got a good arm. All right. This is not about Johnny Hecker. It's about putting the ball and the trust of all of your, I hate the word momentum, but really, if we're using sort of the same logic that Sean uses when he talks about feel for the game, putting all of your momentum in the and hopes of making really an effort there at the end and really deciding, like I said in my column, to swing the heck back and connect. Right. Right. Even after you have a shiner, even after you're up against the wall, to start swinging your way out of it, right. That's not the way to do it. The Rams have not put a cohesive, coherent, even close to that game together on special teams this entire season. Yeah. They are atrocious in every phase but the kicking game. And they are like last in the league in DVOA, according to Football Outsiders, and they have stayed there. And to take the ball out of your hands of your quarterback, who still, despite the problems that you've been having early in the game with the turnovers, still leads the league in EPA, still is throwing the ball downfield, past the sticks more often than not, still is able to make things happen, still at that point, even down 21-7, still is averaging 7 yards per play. You take the ball out of his hands and you put it in the hands of your special teams unit that you're trusting to run a fake when they can't even execute punt and kickoff coverages correctly.
And the situation is it's 4th and 8 from the 17. I mean, I can understand. I can look at it both ways. It's 21-7. There's a part of me that says, even though I agree 100% with you, Jordan, about everything you said, there's a part of me that can at least understand taking the 3 points there, that can at least say, okay, we're going to get 3 points. Yeah. We're going to go in 21-10. It'll feel like some momentum. Okay, fine. I agree with what you're saying. I think you have to show that aggression. You have to make a play with the ball in Matthew Stafford's hands. 4th and 8, what do you can look at it 4th and 8 and say, well, okay, that's a pretty low percentage play for Matthew Stafford, right? And I'd agree with that. It is a pretty low percentage play. But what is the percentage of Johnny Hecker faking a field goal from the 17-yard line on 4th and 8 with, by the way, 18 seconds on the clock?
Yeah.
There's no, it makes no sense whatsoever.
And you have to look at it, the logic of it too, Rich, is like, so I would have been fine with field goal. And that's a big statement coming from me because I say go for it more often than not on fourth down.
Right.
But think about this, the sequence of decision here. And this is why this is bad, right? You have decided you are going to throw the ball on fourth down.
Right.
Because you've called a fake field goal. You have decided that you are going to throw the ball on fourth down.
Right.
Instead of putting your offense on the field and your quarterback, having had already decided you are going to throw the ball on fourth down, right. Instead of putting the group that throws and catches things for a living on the field, you have put that now on your punter, who love the guy, but you have put that now on your punter. You've put that on your special teams unit. Oh, and by the way, the 49ers were ready for it. They covered the downfield man like no problem.
Yeah. Imagine that.
So this is not, I mean, this was not sound. This is not what we're, when you talk about aggressive decision-making and adjustments, this is not a good pattern that was showed. And this is one of those things where it's almost like and I asked specifically, I asked Sean McVay about this call after the game, and he said straight up, it's a bad call and that's on me. Shouldn't have made that call. And I respect that. But the bigger part of the problem here, and again, the reason why we're even talking about this, is it's a symptom here.
Yeah.
It's a symptom of a bigger narrative, in that when you adjust, what is your process for making those adjustments? That cannot be it.
Right. It's like, and it goes back to our thing about, you get down to the 1 yard line, and I'm not talking about this scenario. I'm talking about different. Like, you get down to the 1 yard line, and then you kick a field goal, or the 2 yard line, you kick a field goal. Well, what are you doing? Like, you've passed the ball down there, and now you're going to take the ball out of Matthew Stafford's hands to kick a field goal. And in this case, you're going to take the ball out of Matthew Stafford's hands when you know you're going to throw a pass. Like, I don't understand the scenario of it, and what was going to make this work. You're on the 17 yard line. Do you think Johnny Hecker is going to throw a 17 yard touchdown pass? Because if he doesn't, let's say it's 4th and 8. Let's say he throws a nice 8 yard pass.
Yeah.
You're still only
you still at have the to not, try to get a touchdown.
You still have to try to get a touchdown.
You're short of the sticks. Like, you're throwing toward. That's the thing. Yeah. It's not even real aggression. It's fake aggression. You're throwing to the sticks.
Right.
It's not real, man.
It's not a fake punt from the 50 yard line. Like, I totally understand that. If they've got the ball at midfield and it's 4th and 8 and there's 2 minutes left in the quarter and you want to fake that, okay, cool. Because you've still got a long way to go. And that's not the end all be all. Like, this was it. Like, if Johnny Hecker didn't throw a 17 yard touchdown pass there, they were going to have to call a timeout to stop the clock, and they were going to have about 10 seconds left. So they were still going to have, I don't know, maybe two plays to get into the end zone. They still had to get into the end zone. So it just didn't make any kind of sense at all. And it just didn't fit with the ethos, or whatever you want to say, of what Sean McVay has done here. So I don't know. It was just a straight. Did it cost them the game? No, it didn't cost them the game. But this is exactly what you said, Jordan. It just kind of plays into this baffling kind of decision making that's been going on there.
Yeah, I think it like we've been saying, it's just it's a symptom to an overall issue where. I think as a coach, if you're trying to find ways to adjust, maybe we call that one like a vast overshoot. Like, there's a space to find there in terms of aggressive decision making, in terms of adjustments and corrections. And that was just like vastly overshooting the assignment, honestly. And I think, like, you know, it's certainly not the reason they lost the game by far. I think, and this is mostly toward like Twitter, because you can't obviously have a conversation like this on Twitter, and you can't sum up everything that went wrong on Twitter. And you can't even do it really in a column. It's an ongoing conversation.
Right.
So it's a lot of all of this stuff that we talked about. But that being said, like, the Rams have already they have fixes for all of these things. Now, the defense, I am worried about still when you talk about all the things that we just talked about in terms of execution and play calling and scheming and preparation and all of those things. Like, that's, you know, that is something I still am very much concerned about. I think they've put together a couple of really, really good games this year. Actually, Tennessee was an outstanding game for them, even though, and then the crazy thing, if you took away third downs in this game, if you just erased or put like a little piece of tape over that line in the stat sheet, you're like, oh, the Rams, and you hit the score, you're like, oh, the Rams may have won this game because they actually they contained and all of that, but it was the third downs and the catch and runs. And again, everything they were doing pre-snap and even post-snap with their Joker players in terms of picking the better spots where they were always at a 2+1, the Rams having Jalen and Aaron on the other side and even Vaughn now should always be at a 3+1 on their side. But the 49ers completely pivoted and they flipped that sort of philosophy on its head and turned it into a 2+1 for themselves. And then they targeted the players they felt were more susceptible. And it really, that's football. That's the chess game.
Yeah.
So I am concerned about that. I really do think this offense can and will turn this around. I really do think that, you know, guys, I've seen too much of this process with these guys and the work that they've put in. And I think that if Sean McVay really is having that conversation with himself about what kinds of things, just because you have a quarterback who can do just about everything doesn't mean that you need to put all of those stressors on his shoulders every game. You can also build in things that do help him out. I think now that they're going to have a week to onboard Odell Beckham, now that they're going to have a week to sort of figure out life without Robert Woods, I do think that they will make some of those adjustments, and they should. They should simplify some of this, really. Okay. Some of the ways that they can move the pocket. Again, like some of the, you know, bringing in, and you're sort of seeing it already, but not to the amount of that maybe they will be in the future. Like bringing back some of that play action, especially the run action, moving the pocket around, doing things that don't put so much on your interior after 2 weeks in a row where your interior has not shown up. Mm-hmm. Where in weeks prior they did. And, right. You know, we'll say Brian Allen's playing with a pretty severe elbow injury. Right. So, you know, there is that. But at the same time, like, you know, you plan for this as a team, as a franchise. Right. You plan, you don't have much behind him. And that was your strategy that you used as a franchise. So now you have to fix it. And now you have to figure it out. And honestly, I think they will. Going back to our initial conversation on this before we wrap up here, Rich, like mm-hmm. this is not, I'm still not like overly concerned about this team. I still think this is a very, very, very good football team. I think they just went through a lot of freaking change in the last 2 weeks. As we talked about, some of it they introduced themselves. Others were introduced by bad luck in the universe. And now you have to figure out, again, how to swing your way out of it. And doing it with authority and with force. And Sean McVay kicking the freaking door down, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, to me, it goes back to you've got to find a way to maximize Matthew Stafford. And that just doesn't mean Matthew Stafford himself. That means everybody around him and the way that you call plays and the way that you design things. So I think that'll be the big challenge. The good news is, like you said, Jordan, I would put it this way. Everything that they want is still right there in front of them.
Yeah, they control it too. They have to. Yes. It's on them. This is not going to be circumstantial at this point. They're now, the margins are too thin. They have not built the necessary padding for themselves by losses to the Niners, the Cardinals, the Packers game coming up. Right. They have not built the necessary padding for themselves.
Yeah, that's where you would want to be. Yeah. I mean, that's the ideal situation, of course, but they're also not in a situation where, again, everything is right in front of them. And the schedule is going, it's not going to be easy coming out with the Packers. Well, the Jaguars are after that. So, okay. But, you know,
into trap games either, man. Those will kill you.
And that's the thing. You can't, your margin for error decreases so much there. You can't, that becomes a must win. Game because you're that sandwiched between Green Bay and Arizona, but everything is there. And even when you look at the standings, I mean, for all we've talked about, the Rams are still one game out of the best record in the NFC. Now I don't say that to mean they should be cocky or confident about it, but again, I would just say everything that they want to achieve is still right there in front of them. They can still win the division. They could still get the number one seed in the NFC. It's not going to be easy, and I don't know whether I would bet on it at this point, but they still, if they do some of the things, if they address some of the things that we're talking about here, it's still possible. And that's the good news. And I agree with you, Jordan. I think they have the people, then they have the skill and they have the brain power to do it. I don't know whether they will. That's what we're going to find out over the final 7 weeks of the regular season. But I do think they have the potential to do it. So that's why I think it makes the Rams one of the most interesting teams to watch over the second half of the season. So everybody can now take a little bit of a deep breath. Well, not you, Jordan, because you'll be working, as always, for our subscribers at The Athletic, on our app, on our website. Jordan has covered this. I read the comments, Jordan, at the bottom of your stories. And if people ever said half of the nice things about me that they said about you, I would consider my life to be, at least my career, to be fulfilled. So I'm glad that people appreciate all of the extraordinary work that Jordan puts into this beat and to bring you the types of stories that really explain what's going on. And I might sound like I'm patting The Athletic on the back, but I really mean that. I don't know what more you could ask than the coverage that we give you at The Athletic. So Jordan, I think
mm-hmm. Rich, like, and that's nice of you to say, but I always appreciate, always gives me warm fuzzies when people are kind, and kindness that we just need more and more of it in the world. Right. But, yeah. I think that for me, the story is always in the trying, right? It's always in the trying good, to become more, trying to become better, trying to become truthful and really cover the act of trying. And I think that's what makes this team interesting. And that's what makes it so, so important to understand that every piece, every tidbit, every tweet, every podcast, everything, it's a part to a whole story that's happening, that's unfolding. Right. And I know I'm not going to stop trying to find those pieces. And to me, that's what beat writing is. Beat writing is the act of covering the trying and the humanity within the trying. So I'm grateful for everyone following along. If you're not, boy, do I have a fun thing for you.
Oh,
when you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, Rich, why don't you take it from here?
Well, she's you're putting me on the spot here, Jordan. I don't know if I can remember. yes, if you have not yet subscribed to The Athletic, you can do so. Or we're also getting close to the holiday season. So if you want to give a gift subscription to somebody, also a great idea. What you should do is go to theathletic.com/11personnel, and there you can sign up to get not only the outstanding work of Jordan, but all of our great work at The Athletic. And when you do so, you make Jordan happy because you can take advantage of her favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
A great discount. My favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. You guys, definitely make sure that if you are going to become a new subscriber, do it through this podcast. When you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, every single time you will receive a great discount, whether there are deals running or not, you will always get my favorite thing in the world. A great discount. Also love when you guys tweet that at me. It makes my day every single time. We appreciate you guys following along a little bit, hopefully a couple of days of quiet here after a very, very crazy month, but going to be back at it, hitting the ground really hard next week, making sure that we're getting you all the coverage you need ahead of Rams Packers, which is going to be a crucial game for them to win and be competitive in. And kind of show the world what they're made of after a couple of punches in the chin. So I think they can do it. I think they've got the right stuff in that locker room. Like I said in my column, it's a remarkable group of very secure people. So I think that looking inward is a good place to start. And running with that feeling, running with that collective identity that they already have, resettling it and being where their feet are. And I think that this team still has that potential to do that. So thank you guys as always for following along. Thank you for the ratings and reviews. And we'll catch you next time.